Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 79 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. This week, Comic Timing goes back in time. We go back to one of the first topics ever discussed on Comic Timing, episode 6 to be exact, trade paperbacks. This time, we've got Chris Marshall from Collected Comics Library and Sean Pryor from PKD Media on, and the conversation is hot and heavy, so be prepared. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 79 of Comic Timing. Well, this is the first episode officially that's being recorded at the new apartment, as other than that intro I did for episode 78, this is indeed the first time I'm sitting down to do this. And the good news is the fan on my desktop decided to, you know, get no longer working like the minute I move, but that was only $20 to replace. So all's well and good, and I'm working, and so is the co-host Brent Cassina, who is back after a one episode hiatus because he didn't even know the other episode existed. What's going on, Brent?
You sneaky son of a bitch.
It's what I do. Long time no speak, man. How's it been?
Good.
Excellent. You didn't have to do any moving, so hey, I guess your life has been good.
Hey, yeah.
And it has taken us 79 episodes. Why the hell has it taken us so long to have Chris Marshall of Collected Comics Library on an episode of Comic Timing? Chris, man, hello.
How are you guys? It's an honor to be here.
Good to have you on, buddy. Man, we've known each other in the podcasting scene for what, 3 years now, and it takes me this long to get you on an episode? What the hell's wrong with me?
I don't know. Well, Ian, I always contact you whenever I have trouble with WordPress. You know that, so. You're my WordPress guru.
you're very welcome. Yeah, and at some point I'm going to have to introduce you to the replacement for PodPress I've been using called Blueberry PowerPress, as PodPress seems to have been sort of no longer used anymore. But I'll talk to you about that after the show.
Good. I have to upgrade my WordPress anyway, and the new. I know this is off topic, but the new WordPress is up out there. The upgrade, and I'm going to change everything over come the Christmas holiday break.
Yeah. So. Well, there's a problem with the way PodPress handles the latest WordPress. So again, I'll walk you through that.
Okay.
All right, but that's neither here nor there. And this episode of Comic Timing is brought to you by Heroes Corner over at heroescorner.com. You have until this Monday, so you only got a couple of more days to get in your December order for Heroes Corner. So if you're going to be doing so, I guess you better do it soon. The Comic Timing special discount code for December is CTROCKS. That's CTROCKS. So you can get an additional 5% off on your first order with Heroes Corner if you use the promo code CTROCKS. But again, you only have until Monday to do so. This month, the Comic Timing Review Corner books are as follows. Detective Comics number 853 is 50% off at Heroes Corner. Regular price of $3.99, only $2 on heroescorner.com. War of Kings Dark Hawk number 1 is 50% off. That's only $3.99 retail, $2 at Heroes Corner. And Bang Tango number 1 from Vertigo Comics, Joe Kelly's book, is 75% off, only 75 cents on Heroes Corner, $2.99 retail. And there is no special this month at Heroes Corner, but there are huge things to come from Heroes Corner, which they'll be letting you guys know in January. So basically just head on over to the site and check out their deals for the month. They got a bunch of stuff for 75% off, 50% off. So go ahead and check that out. Best customer service around, heroescorner.com. The episode that we're going to be talking about here actually plays off of a really freaking early episode of Comic Timing. So early that the guests on the episode were the Man from 1,000 podcast, David Price, and, of course, Braxton Harrison, who...
What?
I know. I mean, Braxton, I've seen him on occasion on the 11 o'clock comics boards and very slightly on the CGS boards, but I haven't really talked to him in, like, forever. And we talked about trades way, way back then, and that was 2006. And the trade world has changed a lot in the last 2 years, so I figured it's probably a good time to start talking trades yet again on the show. And Brent gets to actually have a conversation in this one. How about that, considering, you know, back then you sort of didn't exist?
I did not exist.
He's just a figment of my imagination that I, you know, created into being anyway, so we're good.
I'm a figment of your imagination.
That's how you prove you're a figment of my imagination. You just repeat everything I'm saying. Wow, that's going to be a very
voice in your
show.
Head. That's all it is. Man.
You're all voices in my head. I mean, there is no one talking to me right now other than the voices through the microphone. So, you know. But anyway, yeah, so we're talking trades on this episode, as I previously stated. But before I mention that, I did mention on the last episode, and well, I'll mention it to Brent actually on a call, even though I already told him about it. Yeah, you're going to see my ass at MegaCon this year. So, yay. It's official. Brandon Christopher, otherwise known as, well, Brandon Christopher, sorry. I can't really say his forum name, considering that he's barely on the forums anyway, so no one's really going to care about it. But okay, fine, the Indigo Fire. And he is going to be there with me as well. Not sure about Raph, but we are going to be at MegaCon this year yet again with Brent. We'll do live shows, probably do the on the roaming reporting and all that. And yay, hooray for Florida.
Is Brandon going to try and come on to me again and call me man pretty?
I certainly hope not, for your sake, Brent.
Yeah, really.
And right now, Chris is wondering what he just got himself into.
No. I'm cool, man. We have our Detroit comic book show, man. It's the greatest.
Oh, yeah?
Oh.
Well, what conventions do you have over there, anyway?
We have the Detroit one. That's it. The Motor City Con. It's in May. It's not that great. It's getting smaller every year, and I don't know. I don't like it. And I'm going to be going to Chicago again, Wizard World Chicago, and there is a possibility that I may go to San Diego, too.
Ooh, okay. Well, if you do go to San Diego, I'm not sure if I'm going to make it there myself, because it all depends on, you know, how much funding I have at the time, but if I am there, I'll make sure to certainly say hello. Make your way over to New York at some point, man. Come on.
Well, it's much warmer in Florida at the same time, you know.
If New York would settle on a date, maybe I could arrange my schedule.
Oh, please don't even get me started. Seriously. It's not even New York Comic Con's fault, the whole date thing. It's more the Javits Center, and that there really should be more than one convention center in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, considering how huge New York City is, and we have one convention center for five boroughs.
Yeah. The Javits is pretty big, though, I got to say.
It's big, but things book up quickly.
Oh, yeah, because it's the only one there, right, yeah.
Right, and because they're still new, they can't actually really get into anything, if you know what I mean. Like they can't pick their date. That's the sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, there he is. Hello. Sean Pryor.
Hey, Ian, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, man? So, you know, to put you on the spot, Sean, we're talking trades on this episode, so I figure we might as well get you in here since you just had a collected edition come out yourself, so you might be able to talk a little bit on the inside of you know, what it's like to put one out.
Okay, cool.
Excellent, excellent. As I already mentioned on the show, this one is sort of playing off a previous episode I did where we talked on trades with David Price and with Braxton Harrison from like episode 6 of Comic Timing long ago. Back then I said I'd probably never switch over to trades because I'm more of a singles guy. But as I look at the market now in 2009, things have changed a lot. I mean, like looking at the market now, looking at how much money singles can cost and how much money you can save on trades, I'm thinking trades might be the way to go. So I'm gonna ask Chris this first. How much do you think the trade market has changed over the last 2 years? Do you feel it's stronger now than it was then?
Well, you can look at it from two different angles. You can look at it from the new stuff that is being put out, like the more current comics, I should say, being put out. Or are we talking about reprint projects from decades ago? Mm-hmm. Well, so there are two different schools of thought when it comes to that.
Well, you can mention both, actually, at this point. Because, like, is it cheaper now to go dumpster diving or, you know, back issue diving to find those comics from yesteryear or to go out and buy the trade? Then again, is it also, is it even feasible to follow, like, an Uber event that's going on and read the trades in order to try and correspond with that? I mean, you got two problems there.
Well, you got right off the bat, you got a problem with Batman RIP, which actually doesn't end and really until Final Crisis number 7, from what I understand. Well, anybody who is reading Batman, you know, has got to go over and buy Final Crisis 7 or the last couple issues to get caught up on what's going on to find out the real ending. Mm-hmm. And when you buy that trade in 5 months, you know, is that going to include the last couple pages of that storyline from Final Crisis? No, it won't.
Probably not.
And you're going to be pissed off. So, you know, you're better off collecting, you know, monthlies in that format. But if you're looking at older stuff that is hard to find, and you want it remastered and touched up nice with nice art, well, you're better off going to the omnibuses or the absolutes or the masterworks or the archives.
Right, right. Well, Brent and I were talking on like this sort of off the cuff episode we did not too long ago, where both of us were talking about how, you know, we might be switching over to trades sometime soon.
No, both of us. You were talking about that.
Well, okay. So you're doing singles still. You're not a trade guy. Is that what you're saying, Brent?
I'm on trades for certain titles like the Dark Tower Mini. It's about the only thing I'm actually following in trade. I guess when the next Hellboy trade comes out, I'll get that. Trying to catch up on Fables, but any stuff that's coming out concurrently monthly, I'm pretty much getting.
Okay, but do you have a price breaking point? Like, let's say comics get up to, and again, you know, it's not going to happen anytime soon because they're going to go to $3.99 first. But if comics go to $4.99, you know, do you still see yourself picking it up in singles, or will you switch to trade?
I guess it just depends on my income and, you know, what my situation is. Because if it were to go that next month, my situation, I'd be out totally.
Right.
I'd be downloading those things illegally like crazy. And I'd be saving a lot of trees, you know? But as of right now, I'm killing the trees.
Well, hopefully by the time comics cost $4.99 and singles, you know, actually in physical paper form, you'll probably be able to get most of them online actually legit for cheaper than $4.99. So let's cross our fingers on that.
But you know what? Brent, he brings up a good point when it comes to the Dark Tower series. I collect monthlies, too. I mean, let it be known that I'm not just a trade guy. I got a lot of monthlies as well.
Right.
But when you look at the Dark Tower, and Brent, you know this from picking up Dark Tower, there are extras in the back, the prose pieces in the back of those that are
not in
included in the collected edition.
Mm-hmm. That kind of angers me, but
That angers a lot of people. Yeah. Well, so if you wait for the trade on that, you're not getting the whole story.
I'm sure there are like casual, like I'm a pretty casual Dark Tower fan, but I happen to read comics, so I know it's coming out. But I'm sure there are, you know, casual Dark Tower fans that know it's coming out in comics and they don't want to go into a comic shop, so they'll just wait till it comes to Barnes & Noble. And then, you know, they pick it up in the hardcover format and then they find out there's stuff missing from it. Even though it's not like story pages, it's still stuff that was presented in the original single issues that's not being presented in the trade format. That might, you know, make him go, oh, well, I guess this isn't for me or something like that, you know? Like, there may be that one person where they might go, I don't know if I want to get this again if they're not giving me everything that they gave other people, you know?
Well, here, let me disagree with you on that point, because if you're going into Barnes & Noble and buying a Dark Tower collected edition, you don't even know there was extras involved in the comics. I think only the smart comic people like you and I know there is extras in those. Or
your comic reading friend who goes, hey, did you know there are no extras in there that there were in the single issues, and just points it out to you to be a dick.
I think that's few and far between, though. I mean, there are Stephen King fans who are not comic book fans, and they hear about a Stephen King collected edition when they walk into Borders for the Christmas shopping and see, you know, the new Stephen King novel out, or a reprint of this or a reprint of that of paperback novels, and then they see this comic book collected edition of a hardcover for The Gunslinger. Oh, that's pretty cool. I'll pick that up. And they have no idea that there are prose pieces in the back of that.
It's the same way that, you know, certain Buffy fans will go up and pick up, you know, the trades of Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8, but it sure as hell doesn't mean that they're going to go to the comic shop and pick up single issues, let alone any other comic book in their life. You know,
Not only that, you always take into the fact of consideration that in many cities, comic book stores are like speakeasies. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they're hard to find. Sometimes you might not have one at all. A Barnes & Noble or a Borders, Books & Music or Books & Million, you know, you got to, you know, comparing a comic book store to a bookstore is like a liquor store. There's almost one on every corner, almost, as compared to a comic book store, which is, you know, really difficult to find. Mm-hmm. On that whole trade front, you know, I could definitely understand frustration. The fact there are like a lot of books that I've gone to the trade format, especially with Marvel, because Marvel's pricing point system is just beyond. Just it makes no sense. Their pricing point system on singles, you know, some singles are $3.99, some singles are $2.99. Mm-hmm. Their trade pricing is just, pardon my French, fucking ridiculous.
It's crazy. Yeah.
you know, I'm like, I don't really care much for that, and it's making me real choosy with their company as to what I buy. My issue is this: if I have to pay $3.99 for a comic book, don't give me an 8-page story and then give me, you know, like a 24-page reprint. I didn't ask for that. Now, granted, I know I don't have to buy it, you know, but still, I'm like, come on now. You know, if my company tried to pull that shit, we'd be out of business. Mm-hmm. Period. Because, you know, nobody's gonna take that from a small guy.
Eight pages a story? When is that happening?
Warren Ellis.
Avengers Classic is doing that.
Well, Avengers Classic is different, though, because you're writing about that, knowing that it's a classic Avengers. You know,
No. But they had the reprint of Avengers 1 and Avengers 2, and then they'd have an 8-page story, mm-hmm. a brand new story.
Okay.
And then they, you know, that's how they would entice you
okay.
to buy. And it was for $3.99, $4.99, something like that.
That's a certain audience, though. I mean, most of the people who are going to be going that are probably going to be the old school Avengers fans that feel like they need to pick up every single Avengers story. Like, I wouldn't see like a youngster, you know, like maybe like a 13, 14 year old going into a comic shop and saying, "Ooh, classic Avengers, I got to go pick that up."
I'd rather be like, "Ooh, look, Showcase, 500 pages, $15."
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Another thing I could bring up, though, Chris, along the same lines of the 8-page story thing, how about that Warren Ellis comic that came out recently, that Astonishing X-Men...
Ghost
Boxes. Yeah, Ghost Boxes. Yeah. Thank you. Which was a 32-page one-shot, which they then split up into two comic books, you know, against Warren Ellis' will, but he couldn't really do anything about it because he was just, you know, contracted to write that one story. Then they split it up into two books, filled it with these like dossiers and stuff, and then put it out there for $3.99. And you know, most of the fans are pissed about it, but they still bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's this telling Marvel? They can get away with it. That's where we are right now. That's why the trade market might be the way to go for fans, because you're at least guaranteed that you're going to get more than one 8-page story in there. You know, they're probably going to tell the full story all the way through and give you extras and bonuses and stuff like that. Unless, you know, like you mentioned, Chris, there are the comics out there where you're not getting the full. But then again, there are plenty of trades out there that give you more than you get in the singles. So it's like six in one, a half dozen in the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but do you think that now, you know, they can say that, like, you know, the economy's in the shitter, and this is the reason why we have to raise prices, because we have costs and expenses that we have to meet. Mm-hmm. But in all honesty, let's be real. You know, Marvel Comics just isn't Marvel Comics. It's Marvel Entertainment.
Right.
And, yes, I know that their film division has a budget, and they have, you know, costs that they have to, you know, take care of and budgets to maintain. But you can't sit here and tell me, with the hundreds of millions of dollars they made off of Iron Man alone, and we're just talking the film, we're not talking merchandising, we're not talking toys, we're not talking TV, we're not talking tie-in products, we're not talking T-shirts, you know, posters. We're not even getting into that. You mean to tell me you've made all this money, and you're still making money, hand over fist, not even talking about DVD sales and DVD revenue. Yes, we have separate divisions, but you mean to tell me you got all this money and you want to raise your prices to $3.99. To me, it's their way of saying, you know what, let's see how far we can push this, because really, we want to put our stuff in trade anyway, and we want to move to just putting out our stuff, you know, a book out four times a year, but in trade format, a nice, thick, big book. Mm-hmm. So let's see how high we can raise these prices before people walk away, and then we just start putting out trades. You know, are they trying to adjust people to take the trade, or... are they just, you know, trying to just get money? I mean, the main goal of a business is to make money. Let's make that clear.
Right.
You know, it's, you're trying to make money, but I just don't understand this process, because with Marvel, it's all over the board. You know, there's no rhyme or reason to it. And if there is, I wish they would explain it.
But is it just Marvel, or is it also DC?
Because, no, DC's doing it a little bit too, aren't they?
Yeah, DC's starting to do it. Yeah, and don't even get me started on the way DC puts out their trades, because you know they'll trade certain series like literally the next month, and then you got to wait 6 or 7 months to get books like Blue Beetle and stuff like that, and that's still pissing me the hell off. I mean, it's understandable that they're going to put a Batman book out maybe the month that it ends, mm-hmm. but. You know, there are people that are following these smaller stories in trade, and want to get them right away. And they seem to just be completely ignoring those guys at times.
Well, then there's also the issue of the hardcover, softcover, release dates. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very excited that the Giffen De Matteis Justice League run is now available in trade. Well, the hardcover came out first. And, you know, then Volume 2 came out in hardcover, Volume 3 came out in hardcover, Volume 4 was solicited last month, and now this month, the softcover to Volume 1 is finally solicited.
Right.
Mm. You know, you shouldn't have that far of a gap, you know.
Well, Chris, where do you stand on this? I mean, the whole gap between the hard and the soft. I mean, isn't this sort of similar to the way that books are done, where, you know, the hardcover will come out first, and then... written word books, not books with pictures that we all know and love.
You mean book books?
Yes, book books, exactly. Thank you. You know, like where the hardcover will come out, and then you won't see a soft cover for 6 or 7 months. Sometimes you'll see added content at a soft cover, but that hardcover will definitely be on the shelves for a significant amount of time before you see a soft.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, a good example of that is I covered the three separate volumes of Sinestro Corps, and I thought that volumes 1 and 2 should be put together. Really, you could have made you. There are cases for that three book series, that you could put them all together into one massive volume, mm-hmm. or to have volumes 1 and 2 as one volume, and the secret the Tales book be a separate volume, or. You know, keep them all three, and then when the soft covers get solicited, which they are now, mm-hmm. put all three of them together in sort of some sort of soft cover omnibus, so they're all together. Mm-hmm. So it's different. You know, editorial works different in every company, and you know, I don't know what their plans are. But if I can I go back to Sean's point real quick,
sure.
about finances? I think, Sean, you know, one thing you can't predict is – the hardest thing to predict is the future. Mm-hmm. And looking at we are now in this economy today in December, back when Iron Man came out this past summer, you couldn't have predicted the economy this bad. And, you know, the automakers and the bailout from IAG and the crap that's going on in Illinois right now. I mean, it's – you know, these things are budgeted, you know, a year in advance. And I it's hard for me to blame Marvel – when it comes to fiscally, you know, but that said, they could have rolled back their prices for the solicitations, but a lot of it is already budgeted for, and I was wondering if you've got a thought on that.
No, and I understand that. I mean, I do understand it, but like when a company like Top Cow makes a promise in 2009 to keep all their books at $2.99, you know, which could be a make or break, and they're smaller than Marvel, but yeah, they may not have all the overhead that Marvel does, but if they can do that, you know, why can't Marvel stick to it? And I'm not saying that they have to do that with every single book, you know. But you would think that, you know, their flagships or their big sellers, they would keep it $2.99. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just my take on it. And another issue that I have as far as with the whole pricing thing, and if I jump off topic, please just keep me on point. Because a Negro does have a tendency to ramble.
No, we're not talking about race.
Okay, I know. I'm playing with you. I'm playing with you.
We don't need Derek on the show tonight.
Well, okay. Well, think about your demographic. You got here. You got the Jew on the call. You got the black guy. You got whatever Brent is, and
Southerner, and you got the Northerner.
There you go.
I got the white suburbanite Catholic right here. So
that's all.
Me too.
I think our census is going well, but continue, Sean.
Yes, we are the United Nations of comics. Damn it, I lost my point.
Muslim.
You know what it is, Sean? There's too many damn titles.
Yeah, that's another problem. Yeah. Thank you. That is the point I'm trying to get to. There are too many freaking titles. Yeah. Way too many. And, you know, that's another issue. Like, with say, for instance, with that X-Men, what was it called? The boxes thing?
Ghost boxes.
Yeah. Ghost boxes. Yeah.
Ghostbusters.
Okay. You have ghost boxes, you know, they split in half, you know, and then they have all these other one shots. And there's Marvel's had like a bunch of one shots, and DC's had a couple too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they have a bunch of one shots just to hold the course if a book is running late. And then, like, they find a way to trade all those one shots later. You know, it's ridiculous. I don't, you know, I personally don't need those one shots, you know, but that's just me.
Right.
But there are a lot of books. If you look at DC is a perfect example. You know, they're coming out with like a bunch of limited series. you know, some of them are like, you know, a retelling of origins, like Cyborg. You know, they have a retelling of origin, but yet they incorporate a new story. They have Black Lightning, Terra, you know, all that stuff. And don't get me wrong, some of it's cool, but some of it's garbage. Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't need all that. And Marvel is kind of bad when it comes to, like, you know, all these events. And when Civil War was going on, Annihilation was going on, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Annihilation was going on at the exact same time as Civil War, yeah.
You know, and my whole take is, you know, Annihilation was really good. And in my mind, from a business standpoint, why would you undermine Annihilation by putting out Civil War? You know, but that's just my take. Sometimes I look at things just a little differently because you have all these events going on, and now you got, like, you know, War of Kings, and you got Dark Reign, and you got, you know.
They're trying to please too many people at once.
Right.
And, I mean, there's going to be fans of cosmic books, and there's going to be fans of, you know, like the regular on-Earth stuff from Marvel. That's why they did Annihilation and Civil War at the same time, so that they could have their big space event going on at the same time as their, you know, on-Earth event.
Right, and I like the cosmic books. I think they're great. I think they're great, but you know, you're right. Chris is right. There are too many titles, and they need to really cut that stuff back.
Sean, would you like to see, if they do cut back but want to keep some of the stories going, would you be in favor of Marvel doing like a 60-page or an 80-page or even a 100-page at a higher price of like a Marvel Comics Presents and have like four different tales running through that for like maybe $6.95, $6.99 or something like that?
Aren't they bringing back one of their anthologies as of this December previews, Chris, if memory serves?
I think they try to do it every couple years, but it doesn't really go anywhere. Because they put in these back-ass characters that nobody cares about. They got to put like a Captain America or a Spider-Man or one of their headliners in there to keep the things going. You know, I don't care about reading about, you know, the new whoever character that they're trying to, you know, bring back in some light. You know, they got to bring a headline character in one of those books.
With Astonishing Tales that's coming out, it's supposed to be a big anthology, so you know they're going to put Wolverine in it. And it's like Wolverine, Punisher, Iron Man 2020, and then you got a couple of B-listers. You know, I'm fine with something like that. If you give me, to answer your question, Chris, if you give me a big book, you know, bunch of characters and stuff like that, bunch of stories, I'm cool with that for a good price point. But here's my problem. Here's my problem. And Marvel is good for this. They were good for this in the 80s, and they were good for this in the 90s. Marvel Comics Presents Wolverine. When that first started, that book was great. And then they just said, you know what? Oh, man, Wolverine's selling like hotcakes. It doesn't matter who draws this shit. You know, and they just started bringing all these artists, and they brought in, like, you know, all these, you know, different characters into the books because you got multiple stories, which was great, but the art was crap. Mm-hmm. You know, and my whole thing is I love a good story, but but good or great art makes a story even better. And my biggest concern with Marvel is that I don't want one of those what-if compilations, like What If Civil War. You know, cool stories, but some of the art is rushed and sloppy. You know, no offense to the cats doing what they got to do. I understand you got deadlines, but I can't lie. Some of that shit was sloppy. Mm-hmm. But that is my biggest concern from Marvel standpoint, from any company standpoint, of trying to do a big book. If you go and do it, please try your best to do it right.
Yeah. And looking at the solicitation for Astonishing Tales number one, you're going to get an Iron Man story. You're going to get a Iron Man 2020 story, which is Aaron Stark, if memory serves. Arno Stark, the future Iron Man, which is actually a bad guy. And you've got writers C.B. Sapolsky, Daniel Merlin, Goodberry, Chris Sacara, and Jonathan Hickman. I only know two of those names, C.B. Sapolsky and Jonathan Hickman. Pencils, you've got Kenneth Rockford, Liu Kang. Yes, that is actually his name. So for
fight.
Bicycle kick!
You've got Liu Kang and Chu Chan on pencils. I'm just going to leave those two alone, thank you. All right?
Chu Chan.
Chu Chan train. Shaolin and Wu Tang.
Somewhere Raph is just banging his head up against the wall. Nick Patara and Jonathan Hickman on pencils as well. So you got that. But other than the Iron Man story that I see in the solicitations, none of these things are anything big. You've got a Cannonball and Sunspot story.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right. I mean, come on. Who is clamoring for a New Mutants Cannonball and Sunspot story right now where they go to Mojo World? You know, yeah. I mean, put your big characters in these tales. You know, put your Captain America, put a Brubaker Captain America story in here. Everyone will buy it. No questions asked. Even if the rest of the stories are shit, if you put a Brubaker Captain America story in Astonishing Tales, people will buy it. I guarantee to you.
See, I don't mind a B or Z lister in a book every now and then. But the problem is, off the first, I have like the, you know, that rule of the first couple issues, you can't put any Z or B Z teamers mm-hmm. in that type of book. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. You know. Now, it's, the further you go down, and if you want to, you know, bring some people up from the ranks, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that as long as you're continuing to give me at least one to two solid stories. Because, you know, I understand you got to change things up a little bit. But yeah, I'm not feeling a Cannonball story. I'm not feeling that at all. I'll take Rawhide Kid, you know, before I take a Cannonball story.
And is it a coincidence that DC's bringing back their anthology the same month that Marvel is? What's the anthology that DC's bringing back? Is it Amazing Comics? No,
Adventure Comics.
Yeah, their oldest comic book, which, you know, all the old fanboys are pissed they're not starting at like issue 630 or something like that, where they cancel it. But you know what? It's been gone long enough. Starting it at number one isn't going to kill anybody. But still, you know, they're both bringing back their anthologies, and this one's going to start off with Legion of Superheroes, which is probably a good move. But still. You got to let people bite a little bit more here. I mean, Brent, I know that you mentioned that you know, certain comics that you're definitely going to want to pick up in singles versus trades. If those books that you're enjoying in singles switched over to an anthology, would you be pissed, or would you pick up the anthology?
I'm really only, like, the books that I'm following in trade aren't published by the same company. Okay. You know, so I'm really only following one thing from Marvel, and I'm really only following like one thing from Dark Horse. So if they put them into an anthology from each company, I'm still not going to get it.
Well, yeah, but what about the singles? That's what I'm saying. I mean, single comic books that you're picking up on a regular monthly basis, if they were to maybe put three of those books into one anthology, what would you do?
You were saying the ones that I'm already following in trade, though.
Right.
Originally.
Well,
right?
No. Did I say trade or did I say single? I meant to say
all those titles you're following in trade, if they put them in an anthology, would you get it?
Okay, all right. Well, you can answer both questions then, the singles and the trades. You already answered the trades, so go to singles.
I think they could put out a JLA-JSA anthology, and I'd still get it.
Combine,
you know, as many different books they're having out come out now. They got JLA, they have JSA, which is coming out like four times a month now or something, and they're going to have that Justice League book come out. They'll probably launch some milestone book come out. Put Brave and the Bold in there.
Power Girl,
you know, which I'm not going to pick up regularly, but if they did put it in an anthology, I'd get it. Yeah.
Okay, so that's where you stand. I mean, it wouldn't annoy you if the single books switched over to an anthology. I mean, would you be annoyed if you were picking up, say, maybe three stories that you liked and two that you didn't inside of an anthology, and they were charging you like $7?
No, I'd probably grow to like those other two. I mean, so if are we talking like 22-page stories or like 8-page type things?
Well, Chris, what's more feasible for an anthology? Like 22, 8, or somewhere in between?
No, probably somewhere in between. Okay. 20, you know, 22 is fine.
Okay, then yeah, 22-page stories, maybe four stories per book.
Okay, so that's 80 pages for...
It's like an 80-page giant, or it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I was alluding to earlier. You know, something a little bigger.
Yeah, but for like $5 or $6, that'd be great. Rather than me getting like Hulk now, which is split up into two different stories, you know, half and half the book, and I'm kind of like, well, I bought a book and I got half a story.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings up a good point. That's another thing I was going to bring up to Sean is not only are there too many titles, but it seems that like a 6-issue story arc is drawn out 2 issues too long.
Yeah, very true.
So,
very, very true. And yeah. I don't like using the word decompression a lot because so many people use it. But yeah, that's a nice way of putting all that out there. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, just tell the story.
Just read the Moon Knight story arcs. My God, they're just I had to drop that thing. It's got way too long.
He never left his fucking house. I dropped that story after like issue 9 when he was still in his apartment talking to himself. I'm like, okay, I don't care if this is going anywhere. Someone else can tell me about it. I'm not picking up this book.
It had beautiful covers, though, I gotta say.
but the insides were crap.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a real quick question. You brought up Brave and the Bold. I mean, how is that going? I mean, how do you guys like that?
Not very format? Well.
No. I'm not talking about art or writing. I'm just talking about the character matchups, basically, and how the story is progressing. Because
I liked the Mark Waid stuff, but once Mark Waid left, it's pretty much fallen off the wagon. I mean, I really like the way Mark Waid had it, the first 12 issues. You have this duo, and then one of them crosses over to the next one, and that one crosses over to the next one. Occasionally you get some random one, but it all tied together. I thought that was pretty neat.
And that was Perez, right?
That was Perez, yeah.
In the beginning, yes.
Yeah, and then eventually it switched over to Perez's inker, right? What was it, Layton or?
Jerry Ordway?
Ordway, there we go, okay.
It's Ordway. He wasn't inking, though, but yeah. That was like at the very last issue, I think, wasn't Perez, or the last couple.
Yeah,
the last couple issues.
The current Brave and the Bold run, like, they've had the same two people in the book for the past four issues, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong. But if that's the case, see, that's one of my problems, because I was reading Brave and the Bold for a minute, then I had to stop because just of budgetary reasons. But I was looking through previews, and if memory served me right, it's the same two people for this, like, for like four issues.
Yeah.
Now, my
whole
thing
is Phantom Stranger.
Okay, see, that's a problem. You know, I think, you know, the max you should be able to go with the same two characters is no more than two issues. You know, that way it keeps it fresh. You know, I thought this was like a team-up book. So, you know, I should see, you know, at least every two issues, one to two new characters, at least. You know, switch it up, do something. Mm-hmm. Not the same two people, you know, for four issues. You know, that could really detract readers.
And even when Mark Waid was doing it, there were certain issues that I read it and I was just bored to tears because they were matchups that just didn't work for me, or they were characters that I knew nothing about. So I was sitting there going, like, scratching my head going, eh? You know, and for me to be bored with a comic book written by Mark Waid and drawn by George Perez, there's something fundamentally wrong about that. You know, like, I mean, I went into I went into it thinking it was going to be like one of the best things out there, and yeah, maybe six issues out of the 12 were, but then there were six stinkers, and if it was in a trade format right off the bat, I wouldn't have been feeling that nearly as much. I guarantee you.
So I wouldn't feel bad about that, Ian, because we're living in 2008, not 1988. Things have changed. Waid is a different writer, and Perez is a different artist these days.
Right.
I wouldn't feel too bad about that. I mean, you just can't go into it. I guess that's the wrong mindset. You can't go into expecting, oh, boy, this is going to be like Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not.
Well,
this
I wasn't. I was just expecting, you know, genuine fun because of the team-up aspect. And there were just some issues that just dragged, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's why I'm like, definitely looking back on it now, I probably made the wrong decision picking this up in singles. Because the story that he was writing at the time, which was, you know, like the 12-issue arc, certainly would have read better in a trade. But with Brave and the Bold also, what I'm finding is, like, how do they expect new readers to get drawn in to a story about Batman and Jay Garrick meeting for the first time?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, what audience are they going for here? I mean, are they going for the younger readers, or are they going for the older readers, or are they going for whoever happens to pick up the book? I mean, that's why Brave and the Bold was not getting the sales anybody expected it to get when Waid and Perez were on the book, and that's certainly how I feel about it.
And Adventure Comics may have the same fate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. But that brings up the point. Should these be coming out in trade off the bat? Or should they be coming out in multiple issue packets, maybe, or something like that, right off the bat? I mean, going back to the whole trade concept. I mean, Chris, do you think these books would do better if there were, say, four or five issues in one volume, just come out straight like that as like a graphic novel or something like that?
I think if you look at something that was released this week in trade, like Captain America: The Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I joked about it on this week's podcast. And wasn't this just solicited yesterday or 6 months ago for a six-issue run? I mean, seriously, I think I just read about this, and now it's already out in trade. And Sean, I think you alluded to it. You know, the trade gets issued the week after the final issue is out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it should have been put out in trade form in the first place. There's nothing wrong. I mean, I think companies are afraid to experiment with that and putting out a brand new book. I mean, I remember I think I'm the oldest, one of the oldest guys here. Sean, I'm not how old you are, but back in the 90s when the Punisher had his graphic novels, those are great. And they sold well. They were 100 pages long, 120 pages long.
He had a few of those, didn't he?
Oh, he had a bunch of those, yeah. And I think those sold rather well.
And weren't there also, because like, from my father handed me down his collection actually earlier this year because he wanted me to liquidate it for him. And I was going through some of the books he collected through the 80s and early 90s. There were a bunch of Wolverine, like 40 and 50 page, one shots that were put in a nice, you know, square bound format as well. So it does work. It does work, because if it didn't work, they wouldn't have kept on doing it during that period of time. So, no, I think you're right. There's a market for it, and it definitely does work.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you were to look at, like, the Joker hardcover, if that came out in singles, you know, I think, you know, Chris, you guys talked about it on the comic book page. I think it's – I don't know what the number was. It was, like, 3,200 or something. It was up there, though. Was it higher than that?
But I mean, off the top of my head, I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Okay,
but yeah, it sold pretty well.
Yeah, it sold pretty well for a trade. But if you had it that, you know, in singles, then it would have sold a lot more. You know what I'm saying? It probably would have been, you know, maybe like 40,000 copies. Times six issues is a lot more revenue. You know, at $3.99, probably they would have charged for that than just coming out in trade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was a pretty high profile graphic novel. You know, Lee Bermejo, Brian Azzarello, two greats in the industry, and it only sold, you know, not everybody bought it, basically. Or not everybody bought it right away, whereas if it had come out in singles, everybody would have bought it right away. Yep. So I don't blame them for wanting to not put stuff out in trade, because, you know, if you look at the Joker hardcover, yeah, it sold well for a trade, but it's not selling well enough that they should go, oh, well, we should do more stuff like this more often.
Yeah, but do you honestly think it would have sold better as singles?
I think so, yeah. 40,000 copies in issue, it probably would have been like at the mid-level. Maybe not 100, but more than it would have taken to cancel a title. Come on.
But would it have sold 40,000? And plus, you got to remember that they're charging, you know, a lot more than a single issue for these 40,000. So you are multiplying that by what was the price on the Joker hardcover?
It was like $20 for 120 pages.
Okay, so 100,
so like 4 or 5 issues for $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so $4
and 30,000 people. That's probably as good as you would have did if they came out in singles. Am I right?
Right, so $35,000, that's still a higher profit margin than the hardcover.
But let's also factor this in, and Chris, I'm sure you can definitely have an opinion on this. The reason it came out in hardcover right off the bat was because it took them forever and a day to finish it. So let's say issue one comes out, and then you don't see issue two for 6 months.
I don't think it was a factor of it took them forever to finish it. I think they
it did. It took them.
Yeah, it
years.
Did take them forever. But I don't think it was ever planned as a 6-issue miniseries or anything. If you read that, there's really no story break. There's no cliffhanger at the end of each issue to get you coming back. Like if you were to space it out at, you know, every 20 or 32 pages, there's no big story break. It just keeps going on and on and on. So I think it was originally planned as an original graphic novel or whatever, just to see if experiment that. But I think your argument would be better suited for something that did have a cliffhanger every 202 issues, and you were just like, why is this here? I'm going to read it anyway.
Right, right.
I have a question. Actually, I'll shoot this question, if I could, towards Chris. As far as this whole trade process goes, I think a lot of times that we have situations where you have, you know, customers both young and old who aren't getting the books they would like to see traded. They're not, you know, some of them are getting what they want, but there are a lot that aren't getting what they want. Do you think there will ever be a time within the comics market where somebody could go to a publisher's website and say, you know, I would like all these issues of Shogun Warriors from the 70s and a couple of these crappy Marvel Battlestar Galactica books and, you know, some of these X-Men comics, some Claremont and Cockrum. You know what? I want to put all this together in one trade. Let me click on all these. And let me process this order. And in a couple of weeks, it gets sent to you.
Boy, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Now,
especially Shogun Warriors, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And someday, you know, we'll all be handed gold bunnies and we'll dance in like this wonderful Garden of Eden where everything will be absolutely perfect and the world will be great.
Why do you have to kill my dream? Why do you have to kill it? No, no, but in a way, right now, I understand why they can't do that. I kind of understand why they can't do that because I'm thinking that certain artists and certain writers have certain royalty rates, and they're like, well, you know, if somebody tries to put a compilation book together, how do we distribute this money, you know, properly to said artist and said writer, you know? So that I'm sure that has a lot to play into it, but I think that, in a way, could also be the future of a quote-unquote trade market as well. I think it could be a viable market if it's put together properly and done right, but it has to be tested first.
Mm-hmm. But who's willing to test it?
You think if anybody was willing to test it, it'd be the big two. I mean, it's kind of I would think it's a little bit more difficult for like a smaller publisher to try to pull off something like that. Well, then again, if you're a smaller publisher with fewer titles, you could probably experiment. That wouldn't be too much of a big deal. But if I was one of the big two or big three or big four, I'd be more than willing to give it a go for a little while. You know, if you can plan it and put it in a budget and plan it out and see if it could work, I'd definitely try it. You know, but then you're going to go through the issue of what books can you put out there and what books can you not put out there due to licensing issues, right? When licensing contracts are up. Because, damn it, I wouldn't get my Shogun Warriors because Marvel's not going to spend any money on a Shogun Warriors licensing rights, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, that something like that would come into question. But I think it can be done. But the question is that would anybody have the cojones to even try it?
Chris, would anybody have the cojones?
I don't know. I mean, I think we're a long way off from that. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, let me jump in. The Joker hardcover was $29.99 and had an estimate sales of just over 17,000 units.
No, it was $19.99.
$19.99. I'm sorry. Okay. You're right. What did I say?
Yeah. $30.
Yeah. You said $30.
Wouldn't have bought it for $30. Fuck that.
But you know what? But was it? I mean, it was brought out in October, which was a very odd time to bring that book out.
Well, Halloween, right?
I guess, but it should have been based more around The Dark Knight or Christmas when the DVD comes out this week.
Yeah,
or, you know, or last week. You know,
would have made more fiscal sense. Yeah. But then again, you know, the creators Azzarello and the artist's name escapes me as usual.
Libra Mayo. They've been trying to distance it from The Dark Knight as much as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
For some reason, I mean, why not just say, "Hey, yeah, whatever, sure." If you want us to take it that way, then more people would want to buy it. Rather than going, no, putting on the brakes like, you know, like crazy, like they're trying not to hit a little kid crossing on his way to school, you know, no, we don't want to do anything like that. Like, why not be like, if you want to take it that way, sure. I mean, whatever happened to the whole thing about, you know, it's up to the reader how they want to interpret it or not. You know, it used to be that you would ask an author or some, you know, about something they wrote. And, you know, asking them to interpret it for you, you know, ask them a question, and they'd be like, you know, if you want to interpret it this way, it can be this. And then if you want to interpret it that way, it can be that. That. See,
that, I'm talking, that.
I'm talking like I live in Brooklyn or something, you know.
Hey, what are you talking about?
Hey, have you seen any cameras around with the real world Brooklyn coming out? I thought that was hilarious. Anyway, so
it's not my area of Brooklyn, luckily.
Okay. All right. It's the nice end.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah. Where was I?
I don't even care anymore. You sucker.
Yeah, but they're just trying to distance itself so much that I couldn't see them, you know, saying, yeah, let's put it out when something other Batman-related comes out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're...
You should have waited till 2009 to bring it out.
Point. Yeah. Like New Year, like January.
I think it's... Didn't they... Yeah. I heard somewhere that... I think it was on 11 o'clock comics that... I don't know where they heard it from, but apparently it's been done like since March of like this year or last year or something like that. I don't know.
And it was just sitting on the shelf?
It's just been sitting there for a long time.
Huh. Okay. Then, yeah, they should have just waited then if that's the case. I mean, whoever made that decision for October, if it wasn't actually the creator's decision, then I'm in Chris's camp. They should have waited. But, oh well.
You know, his analogy was interesting about hitting a child with a car. I've never heard anything like that before.
Well, I mean, it's just something drastic. Like you would never want to do that.
No,
of course. That was their opinion on, you know, that somebody comparing their book to the great film that was The Dark Knight. Like, why? I didn't understand really that. Why wouldn't they want those comparisons to be drawn. The film was fucking fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
no, not.
I could see, you know, Garth Ennis coming out with Punisher Warzone, the miniseries that came out this week, and then somebody comparing it to the shitty movie that just came out, and then them putting on the brakes, you know, like crazy, like, no, no, this is not whatever, but...
Oh no, I got
I
you fully.
Understand that, you know.
Yeah. Oh no, I understand. But you had a point where you were saying that, you know, do they not, you know, do people about people not being told what, you know, what this means or what to buy or what to, or how to interpret things, if I remember correctly. But the big problem is with like a lot of readers now, and if, like I said once again, if I'm wrong, please correct me on this. A lot of people want to be told what they're supposed to read and want to be told how to interpret it. And, you know, they just want to be spoon-fed stuff. Not everybody, but a lot of people are like that, unfortunately. And I think issues like that where, for me, if you'd put out this book around, you know, around the same time, like if you'd put out this book right now with, the, you know, with the whole Dark Knight DVD release, you know, I'm smart enough to realize that this has nothing to do with the Dark Knight movie per se. Mm-hmm. You know, but this is another, you know, Batman or Joker book. Okay, cool. Let me check it out. Let me read it.
Yeah.
I can understand that. I can process that in between my brain. And I think a lot of other people can too. But there is this, you know, thought process with, you know, with businesses and publishers that, you know, anytime, you know, there's the whiff of cross-pollination, they get scared. Because they think people are so dumb, they won't be able to differentiate between the two, and they might end up hurting the overall sales of either said movie or said book.
Well,
and
I think it's just DC, though. Like Marvel, when Iron Man came out and they launched the Invincible Iron Man title, or relaunched it, because I don't know, it was named the other Iron Man title, was that before?
Yeah, that
20 issues ago, right?
Yeah.
Some stupid ass
well,
one.
It was even still listed in previews yeah. as Invincible Iron Man.
And then you gave it to War Machine or some bullshit.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So, but they had a movie variant cover of that first issue with Tony Stark on it. And they
right.
came out with, like, didn't they come out with some Iron Man omnibus? And I think one of those things had a movie cover on it. So I think it's just DC that's afraid to cross-pollinate. And, I mean, no wonder they don't have any good movies coming out.
Well, not only that, but you got to take into consideration, once again, you have Marvel Comics, which is a part of Marvel Entertainment with Marvel Films. You have DC, which is with
Warner Brothers.
And that is a company that still to this day does not understand what they have in a company like DC.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I've noticed so far that they understand, they're starting to understand the DC animated universe, that stuff they're getting down pretty well because New Frontier, I enjoyed. You know, the whole Batman Gotham Knight thing before the Dark Knight movie came out, you know, it was cool. I enjoyed that. You know, they got this Wonder Woman cartoon coming out. Looks cool. They have that process down pretty well. They have that the DCAU lined up very well, doing a great job with that. That's the only thing to me Warner Brothers has on point because.
Always been successful for them, though.
Yes,
you had Batman the Animated Series, you had Superman, then you went to Justice League to JLU, and then finally when that ended, you're doing these movies now run by the same guys.
And the Batman the Animated movies also. Don't forget that.
Right,
Mask of the
yes,
Phantasm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
if it's run by the same guys and they have this successful history, they're going to let them keep doing that. And they're not – the problem is that they're not – you know, there's no cross-pollinations or anything like that because they just don't get it.
Yeah, that's why I still don't understand to this day how come we don't have a solid, awesomely spectacular Superman movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean
– You have – and I'm sorry once again to break the –
No, go ahead.
Break the thought process of what we were originally talking about. But once again, you have all these incredible writers. You have a solid combo company. You've got years upon years of material to use. And the only thing you can give me is that Superman is a baby daddy. And he's fighting against a kryptonite real estate. This is what you give me.
You hear that, Raph?
This is what you give me. After all these years, I waited. I sat through Superman 3 as a child. I sat through Superman 4 as a child. And I waited a long time for Superman Returns. And he fought a fucking green rock. I didn't want another fucking real estate story. I didn't want that. I'm sorry.
You know,
I'm sorry.
Sean, you sound a little jaded.
I am jaded. Because
you know what else is the color of jade? That kryptonite mountain.
You damn straight it is. And I'm pissed. coolest part of the whole movie is when Luthor shoved that kryptonite shank like an episode of Oz into Superman's back and said fly and pushed him off. I was like, that's fucking awesome. The end. I was ready to go.
And Superman should have died right there.
Yes.
Oh, I've derailed this whole show.
I think of all the characters, and I've said this before, I think of all the characters in all the comic book universes, I do not want to write Superman. I think it would be the hardest character to write for because he's so damn powerful.
Let me bring this back onto the rails of what we were talking about and actually bringing up one of the points that Brent brought up earlier about the whole Iron Man covers with the movies and stuff like that. And this is out to everybody, Chris, Sean, and Brent. Answer at your own peril. Do you guys feel, if they were to do that more often, if they were to have movie covers for trades, even if they weren't about the movie, if they just happened to have a Spider-Man, like say when Spider-Man 2 came out, I'm not going to say 3 because 3 wasn't that good a movie, but if Spider-Man 2 came out and like an Amazing Spider-Man J. Michael Straczynski trade had a Spider-Man movie cover on it, would that have sold better at the bookstores?
Probably. I mean, if you're walking in the bookstore, right, and you just came out of the Spider-Man movie or you saw it last week, right? Mm-hmm. And you walk in and maybe by chance Barnes & Noble has a comic book island or whatever in the middle of the store right in front of the door, right? Because usually in the summer they have something like that where they have the comic book movies that are coming out and they have things related. Mm-hmm. So you're walking by that, you pass, and then you see it with the movie you just liked, Iron Man, Tony Stark, or Spider-Man 2, Tobey Maguire, right there on the front. You'd go, oh, look, this maybe has something to do with the movie. Pick it up, flip through it. You don't realize it. You might still think it has something to do with the movie. You might buy it. You might realize it after you read it. But, hey, you bought it. You read it. Maybe you're going to go back. And going back to the Joker hardcover thing, I made my girlfriend read it because she was looking for stuff to read, and she liked it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to explain to her that it wasn't connected to The Dark Knight or anything like that. She didn't ask. I don't think she asked if it was mm-hmm. or anything like that. She didn't have any problem with it. Now, if she interpreted it that way or not, it didn't hinder her enjoyment of the story.
Yeah, come on, please. And I mean, just because somebody looks like Heath Ledger Joker doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be tied into the universe. Going into what Sean said earlier, people are smart enough to know when something is along the lines of the movie they just saw and when it's not.
Yes.
You know? But Chris, yes or no to the movie covers and whether or not that you think that would make a difference?
We're just talking about like volume 3 of the current run of Spider-Man or something like that. Are we talking
you know what? Let's go for the more the more iconic stuff. Say for example, if you put like Ultimate Spider-Man number 1, volume 1, and gave that a Spider-Man a Spider-Man movie cover, or say like the first volume of JMS's run, that sort of stuff, something to maybe bring people in.
I'd like to do that, but I mean I would be more in favor of having that cover only and not having a second variant cover. You know, like with the Iron Man Omnibus, they did 3 different covers. They did like the classic Tales of Suspense number 39 cover. Mm-hmm. Then they did the Alex Ross, I think I may be wrong, but
the Adi Granoff variant.
Harry Granoff variant. Thing. And then they had the movie variant.
Yeah, and then there was one with Iron Man in his underwear, which is very, very wrong.
Yeah, and it was like that got to be too much. In fact, they did the same thing for the Hulk movie coming out this past summer, but then they canceled at the last minute the Hulk variant cover.
Huh. Interesting.
So for whatever reason they did. But, I'd be more in favor if they stick to one cover, though. I mean, I don't want a movie cover and then, cover B be the Straczynski cover or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But if it's a previous volume, though, there's still going to be the old covers out there. But I would be totally for a new printing with just that cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sean.
I could see it both ways.
Yeah, definitely. Sean, same thing?
No, same thing, pretty much. You know, I don't need a variant cover. If it's a movie poster or movie theme related cover for the book, it's not going to hurt my feelings because, I don't buy a book just to look at the cover for a half hour. You know, I buy a book to read the material inside of it. Mm-hmm. So no, it's not going to hurt my feelings at all. None. I mean, now granted, if you have emo Peter Parker on the front cover, I might not buy it. But I might be a tad deterred. But besides that, oh, no, it's fine.
You know what, though, Ian? You got to be careful, because if you put a Tobey Maguire cover on there, uh-huh. a lot of people might interpret it as the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie rendition, you know, the comic book adaptation of that movie.
True. Yes.
True. They may want to open it up and it starts singing and dancing to him.
Well, I mean,
they have emo Peter on it, you know.
It too.
Well, I wouldn't have him with his mask off. I would just have the you know, the Spider-Man image that they're probably more familiar with from the movie.
Yes. Yeah, see, then that's cool. That I'm cool with.
Yeah, that would be cool. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have Tobey Maguire standing there in street clothes holding a Spider-Man outfit, you know? I mean, because that would just be like, "Hello, I'm Tobey Maguire. Would you like to buy my book?"
He should write a Spider-Man book. He'll make more money.
The Seabiscuit Adventures.
Yeah, that was a good movie. I liked
that. Underrated movie. Yeah, that was a great movie.
Awesome. I liked it too. I thought it was very good as well, but I just couldn't help myself. Sorry.
I'm betting you money that if Tobey Maguire were to ever write a Spider-Man comic, it'd be about the spider buggy.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with the spider buggy. That's product placement at its greatest.
I just want them to do the half and half visual, you know, where you see his spider sense goes off and his face goes half Spider-Man mask in the movie.
Brent, let me ask you a question. You know, going back to you said about Iron Man and tying it in, how they had they had Jon Favreau do the Las Vegas story with Iron Man, and that was cool. But for two issues, but it was kind of cool that they tied Favreau into that. But yet, when they tied Richard Donner into Superman, that didn't work so well. And I was just wondering, you know, should they be involving the directors and writers in the comic books?
Sure, but put a guy who can do it monthly, put Dan Jurgens on it, you know? He's going to turn out a book, a four-issue miniseries in 4 months, much less eight, you know what I mean? But
Dan Jurgens could turn it out in 4 minutes if you ask him to.
I think Viva Las Vegas is seeing the way of a Daredevil target in that Bullseye mini that
Come on, man. Ultimate Wolverine Hulk is coming out.
Yeah, sure.
Wait a minute. Aren't they re-soliciting Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk 1 and 2?
They're re-soliciting it because the other scripts are in. The problem is it still needs to be drawn.
No, I believe Lionel Yu can do it. Well, so, I mean,
no, I know that. But Lionel Yu said the biggest problem is trying to match the style he had back 3 years ago, because he's evolved as an artist since then.
No, I wouldn't want – I'd be like – if I was Lionel Yu, I'd be like, fuck it. I'm drawing it the way I draw now and not putting any effort into it, because they want Lionel Yu. They're going to get Lionel Yu as is.
Yeah.
I don't think his style was a bit that much different than it was on those issues. Didn't they put an inker on him or something? I mean, I don't know what the deal was. They put an inker on him, and his style changed drastically from Secret Invasion to New Avengers. So it was much better for a lot of people.
Even his New Avengers style, though, was different than his Ultimate Hulk Wolverine style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's just got to rein it in a little bit. He did for Secret Invasion. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he can do it for Hulk or whatever. You know, no problem.
All I'm saying is it takes a lot of balls to re-solicit a book that still doesn't have an issue 3. You're re-soliciting 1 and 2 with new covers, and you want me.
Yeah, why didn't they just put them together?
Yes. I would take a buck. Exactly. I would take that. That would be fine.
We
but you're
all
gonna
take that.
We re-solicit two books. It's not done. Didn't y'all motherfuckers learn from the first time y'all did this shit?
Well, no, he did actually hand in all the scripts. That's why they resolicited it. But number 3 is not on the schedule for December. That's where they're fucking up. They should be doing it the same month.
My rule is this. You know, if you're from Hollywood, you know what? Look, you do what you do. Make your money. You know, hey, I'm happy for you. But if you're in Hollywood and you can't fucking finish a 22-page script, quit fucking writing comics. I'm sorry. I know that might be harsh, but no. Quit fucking writing comics, because you're killing it.
You can contact Sean Pryor at PKD.
Sean.Pryor at PKDmedia.com. You know where I live.
You went there.
Come find me. Come find me.
All right.
Yeah, I want to see more things. Like, if you're going to resolicit it, do it the way that PKD Media did the Mercury and the Bird collection, because I'll be honest. That's the only reason why I got it. Not that I couldn't have gotten it anywhere else, because you're not coming to MegaCon, and that's the
No. Nothing's definite yet. Nothing's definite.
I'm trying. I'm kind of in a financial crunch right now, so yeah. I'm trying to work something out.
If he does go, he knows he has a bet already. So that much is a given.
I appreciate that, Chris. I really hope I haven't scared you off with all my rant.
Not at all, man.
Okay, cool.
Come on, man. He's on Around Comics sometimes, and 11 o'clock comics. He's used to this stuff.
Exactly.
Right now.
Cool. I'm just checking. Normally, I'm not this hyper. Normally, I'm a very calm person, but stuff like that gets me fired up.
Dr. Pepper, I guess, right?
Sean, you know, I'm born and raised in Detroit. Nothing scares me.
Okay, that's all you had to say.
Hey,
I got you.
You got a guy from Brooklyn and a guy from Detroit on the call, so I think you're safe, man. Don't worry about it.
Hardcore.
Answering your original question, Chris, about why the Richard Donner stuff didn't work, quite simply, it was Richard Donner.
Yeah. That's my point. Should they be getting these... at all, should they be getting the Hollywood people, like Brent said?
Well, if it had been Bryan Singer, it probably would have been a different story, because
he was supposed to do an X-Men arc, and they never did that.
I don't think Bryan Singer would have hit it on time either.
That's not even what I'm talking about, though. The on time thing. What I'm talking about, though, is they went with the guy from Superman 1 and 2 from the 70s, as opposed to somebody who worked on Superman Returns, which was coming out. You know, getting Jon Favreau to do Iron Man makes sense, because he just directed Iron Man. You know, even if you're not going to get Bryan Singer, get one of the executive producers, get one of the writers for the actual movie or something like that. Get somebody who was actually attached to it that people might know the name of. I mean, hell, Brett Ratner sucks balls, but I mean, if you needed to get Brett Ratner to do an X-Men 3 comic, I'm sure he would have been happy to do so.
But when you bring up the name of Richard Donner, I think of Lethal Weapon and not Superman, so.
You're probably the only one.
I might be the only one.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I love the Lethal Weapon movies, but most people would, at least most geek nerds like us, would definitely associate him with Superman.
Did you say Lethal Weapon?
Yeah, Lethal Weapon. Be very, very quiet.
I'm sorry. It's my Plantronics headset mic.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting Lethal Weapons.
No.
Thank you.
Let me talk a little bit about digests, because when you talk about trade, you got to talk about digests. And
before you start your talk about digests, yes. Gentlemen, I hate to cut this short, but I have to be at work at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's fine.
I have some server detail that has to be done.
Uh-huh.
And if it is not done, I will be in trouble.
Okay. Well, you want to pimp everything out there for everybody in the world to see, my friend.
You know what? I'll just say this. PKDmedia.com, new website coming January 31st or February 1st, 2009. We have Mercury and the Myrrh, the collected edition, Volume 1, which was put available for pre-order on Heroes Corner and DCBS a couple of months ago. Those books have now been shipped to Heroes Corner and DCBS, so you should be getting them in your mailbox very soon, within the month of December.
Right.
We just solicited the book to Diamond. Hopefully Diamond calls us back.
I hope so.
And
Diamond, after all, you never know.
You never know, but I'm trying to keep the faith. I'm trying to stay hopeful on that. And also we have a couple of books coming out in April, with or without Diamond. We got a big anthology book coming out. We're going to try to put out 3 to 4 big anthology books out in a year. We've got one original graphic novel coming out, and we've got a one-shot book called Greenbrook, which I can tell you more about later. 2009 is the make or break year, gentlemen, and hopefully you'll be a part of the ride. And hopefully the car won't stall.
I hope so. And hopefully
the brakes work when the kid crosses in front of you.
Oh, the kid's getting run over.
and you know, hopefully at some point there's, you know, an Ian Levenstein superhero barber or something like that, and Brent Cassino like superhero tailor or something. You know,
I thought we talked about that at the Super Show. You said Ian Levenstein, Jewish lawyer.
Yes, Jewish.
That's
lawyer.
What you said. That's
Damn
what
right.
you
okay.
said. I did not
lawyer.
Say that.
That's
I didn't.
Fine.
Please, I do not want to be sued because you said that.
that's fine by me, man. Come on, superhero lawyer, Jewish lawyer, or anything like that, man.
Phoenix Wright ain't got shit on you, son.
Objection.
But anyway, gentlemen, Chris, it was very nice talking to you, sir.
I'll be in touch, John.
Oh, most definitely. Thank you. And if you want to get a hold of me on the forums, my user handle is OptimusBlack2007 and Sean.Pryor at PKDmedia.com. Brent, it was really cool talking to you for the very first time, and I appreciate it that you didn't fall asleep on me.
Hey, no problem.
All right, man. You know I'm just busting, so I'm just playing with you. Ian, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Pleasure's mine, Sean. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, you guys have a good evening.
All right. Okay, take care. Sean Pryor, one of the nicest guys in comic books. You ain't going to find anybody that nicer than that, even when he is on a rant. So, yay. All right, let's roll into the conversation yet again. I was going to talk about digests and how Marvel Comics had rolled out a couple of digests back in 2006 and 2007 and stuff. Haven't really seen that many in 2008, but they seemed to work pretty decent when they came out. I mean, like Spider-Girl digests sold pretty well. The Sentinel digest sold pretty well. Is this somewhere that DC and Marvel should be turning? Because I know that DC just had to close their Minx line. Which went along those lines with the digest. However, those were just straight graphic novels going into a digest form. Should DC and Marvel be putting out more of their books in digest form, like singles collected in digest form? And if so, what books would be meant for such format? And we'll go with Brent here first.
I don't know. I read the Runaways digest. I got them from the library, and they're pretty good. But sometimes I had a hard time reading what was on the page. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like, even the bleed loss, you know, when it was a double page spread or something, was even worse than that itty bitty digest than a regular trade. And then I thought it was really weird that they put an irredeemable Ant-Man in digest when it's not really a kid's book.
Yeah, what the hell, man? I mean, you're gonna make certain choices. And what wasn't Bullet Points or something like that also put out in digest, if memory serves? I'm trying to remember whether or not that was one of the other ones, but they put out some really odd books in digest.
I don't know if it was Bullet Points, but
okay.
Ant-Man, I was like, what?
Yeah, it doesn't really scream digest to me either, but are there any books coming out now that you'd like to see in digest?
No, I like the regular size, so I'm not going to ask to go, you know, can you shrink this down a little bit? Because I really don't want to read the words clearly. And I'm still young. I don't know how Chris feels about it. You know, I'm not calling you old or anything, you know, but
uh-oh. I'm not 40 yet.
You do have a real job and probably kids and whatever, so I'll just call you older.
Well, I can tell Bullet Points,
senior member,
by the way,
on this panel.
There you go. Bullet Points is brought out in trade, a 5-issue trade for $14.
Okay.
Oh, my roommate says you're seasoned. Seasoned works. You're the seasoned member on this panel.
Turkey gonna base me now? Jesus.
Little cinnamon, little cumin, little stuff. All right, Chris, come on.
It's cumin, damn it. That's a Northern Exposure joke.
I watched Northern Exposure. I get the joke.
Okay, get the joke. All I can tell you about Digest is that my 8-year-old son really likes the Marvel Adventures books. Mm-hmm. And I think as a parent, it's a great format to give to kids. Because, like regular monthly comic books, when I buy them the Marvel Adventures in normal comic book form, they invariably rip and they get folded and they get beat up. I mean, the digests are made for a beating and they're very good for kids. Mm-hmm. And that's really all I can say. I mean, he loves the Avengers and the Hulk and Fantastic Four, and that's kind of what I buy them. Well, you know, that's what I buy him, and he really likes it.
It does prove, though, that there are multiple formats you can put books in for multiple age groups and probably have it work. Like, the digests are meant for kids, and then you can put out the prestige hardcover for Runaways as well, and have the older crowd probably pick those up as opposed to the digest. It just depends on, you know, who you're trying to get with your audience. And I think Marvel's very smart to try to be getting as many audiences as possible to read their frickin' books. And this is the way to do it.
Hey, Chris. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the Marvel, like, Adventures books at Target, where it's like a cardstock cover, but I think there's maybe like 3 or 4 issues in there? It's in the kids' book section at Target. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah, they're a little bigger.
Yeah, they're like oversized, too.
Yeah, they're like the size of a coloring book, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've got a few of those books in the Ultimate Spider-Man books were put out that way, and I got a few of those. Mm-hmm. Those are pretty good. Yeah.
I'd love to have some of those. Like, put out Ultimate Spider-Man in that. $6, you know, it's years and years old now. I'd buy them up like crazy. Mm-hmm. Rather than paying for the trades, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, but should DC be taking this this tactic as well, because I mean, while you might have Marvel books in multiple formats out there with the digests and the coloring book size and the hardcover and a trade, you're never seeing really more than just a hardcover and trade out of DC. I mean, if and again, I'm just throwing these examples out there because this is a recently canceled book and stuff like that. Say, for example, if Blue Beetle was put out as a digest by DC, do you think that would have helped the book? Do you think it would have been able to get younger kids into a book like Blue Beetle, where I feel it was probably one of the most accessible books out there for DC, and they really dropped the ball on it?
I don't really think so.
Chris?
I don't think DC knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
Really, I don't know what they're doing. They're getting rid of some lines. They're adding new hardcover lines, like their classics library. Mm-hmm. You know, they cancel a great new character like Blue Beetle. You know, they kill off Ted Kord. They bring in spoilers. They bring in a new
Captain America's dead too, if you didn't know.
They bring in a brand new Blue Beetle. He gets canceled. And it seems like the week or the month he gets canceled, he is the first freaking guest star on Batman Brave and the Bold.
The very week.
What are they doing?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was up in arms about it when I found out about that. I mean, come on. DiDio, and this is a pure example of what we were talking about earlier, about how Warner Brothers doesn't seem to know what they have because they're not coordinating their departments. You know, I mean, DC can't do anything about the animated department because that's Warner Brothers, sure. But Warner Brothers should be noticing, hey, maybe we should be pimping this character that's showing up in the cartoon, because when somebody goes into the comic shop and realizes that there's no Blue Beetle book there for the kids to buy, what the hell are the kids going to do about this character they just found out about?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, check it out. Okay, so Brave and the Bold premieres on TV with Blue Beetle and Batman. Mm-hmm. Let's get a... I'm sure they have a Brave and the Bold comic series out, but I mean, let's put out something about regular Blue Beetle, and let's send it for free to Toys R Us or whatever, you know, where kids go.
Yeah.
Because they don't go into comic shops.
Yeah. and as an aside, by the way, love that Wolf Friedle was voicing Blue Beetle. Wolf Friedle voiced Terry McGinnis in Batman Beyond.
Yeah, I didn't watch the cartoon, so yeah. I wouldn't know. And I'm loving the Wolverine and the X-Men one, though.
I haven't seen that yet.
I'm torrenting it. Yeah,
I don't know if it's aired yet.
It's only aired in Canada up until now.
God bless Canada and torrents. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, it's a great series when they do air it.
Oh, and best of all, guess who's voicing Batman in this new series? This Brave and the Bold, Diedrich Bader.
Who is he again?
From Drew Carey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
the dark haired one.
Yeah, the dark haired idiot,
not the blonde one.
the guy from Napoleon Dynamite also. He played the Rex karate guy or whatever. Yeah, but no, he plays a very old school Batman in Brave and the Bold. But Brent's totally right though. That, you know, they should be getting these Blue Beetle comics in trade form or single form or whatever into places that not just the comic shop. I mean, you know, get them onto a spinner rack at Borders and Barnes & Noble. Get them into Toys R Us. Get them into somewhere where the kids can see it. And not just Blue Beetle. How about Shazam and stuff like that? You know, I mean, the Johnny DC books. How accessible are the Johnny DC books outside of the comic shop themselves?
Well, I'll tell you what. The new Supergirl Johnny DC book is coming out, and I'm going to give that to my daughter.
Good.
Who is six. And she actually dressed up as Supergirl a year ago. So,
Now you've got a Supergirl that you won't be ashamed to show her, which is good.
Well, yeah, that she can actually.
You know what's weird though, like working at the camp and stuff. I mean, Ian, you and I have talked about this on the show numerous times. Mm-hmm. That you know, you try to give out, like I tried to give out comics. I did it 2 years ago, and the year after that, with you know pretty good success, and then. All of a sudden, this year, I thought about doing it again. I was talking to some of my kids, and they're like, "What? What are you talking about? Like, I don't care. Nobody cares. It's not a medium to them because they don't have any way of getting it. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, outside of the comic shop, that's it.
Right. The only way I got it was because my dad saw him in the newsstand on a spinner rack, and he was on a trip or whatever in the airport, something like that. Mm-hmm. Airport bookstore said, oh, I should probably get something for my son, who's six or seven. You know, grabs a couple, gives them to me, keeps doing it and doing it and doing it, and then eventually, you know, here I am now talking to you, unfortunately.
Oh, unfortunately. Thanks a lot. That makes me feel wonderful.
No, I'm just kidding. No, but you know what I mean? So there's no avenue for them to be exposed to him. So I didn't really blame him for not wanting it. So I didn't waste, you know, the $15 I would have spent on quarter books or whatever at the store.
Well, I wouldn't be sitting here right now if there wasn't a comic shop that was opened directly next to my old movie theater I used to go to, which, you know, isn't even there anymore because, you know, movie theaters are a thing of the past in New York. There's, like, barely any left in Brooklyn. But, you know, it used to be open directly next door to the movie theater. I was waiting online for a movie. God only knows which one it was, but I walked in there, picked up Uncanny X-Men, left, and, you know, got me hooked from there. And kids these days, I mean, I'm totally agreeing with Brent here, kids do not have a way to get into it. I think if there were more digests, if there were digests of the Johnny DC books, if there were digests of the easy to get to, you know, DC comics, just like there were Marvel Adventures, stuff like that, everywhere you looked, like even at toy stores, we'd be looking at probably the next generation of comic book readers right now. And I'm not certain they're there. I'm really not certain they're there right now, Chris.
A lot of it's up to the parents, though, because, you know, I know I've got friends in my neighborhood who brought their kids to go see Iron Man that don't buy comics. And my dad was the same way. When I saw Superman back in 1980, you know, he never brought me to the comic book store to buy me a Superman comic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I got comics in, you know, junior high through friends of mine that read Daredevil and Spider-Man, and that's how I got hooked. And, you know, I picked up right in the time of, you know, 1983, 84, 85, right through the year of 85 and 86, which mm-hmm. was awesome. But, you know, not to get all nostalgic on you, but I kind of had to find that avenue by myself. Okay. And I think a lot of kids have to find that avenue themselves these days too.
Yeah, but how do they find it? That's what I'm saying. I mean,
I think it's if a movie or a TV show sparks their interest, mm-hmm. and if they have same friends that collect comics.
But understand this though: how do they find that when Saturday morning cartoon program, as it was then, exactly. when Ian and I were kids, and you could watch Ninja Turtles, and you could watch Power Rangers, and you could watch Batman, and you would watch the crappy Avengers cartoon or whatever on one Saturday morning,
which is
and
now
the old
Jetix,
X-Men
by the way.
Cartoon, right? Yeah. So it's all, but I mean, but all the new cartoons, Justice League, came on at like Friday nights at 8, JLU Friday nights at 8. Mm-hmm. When does Brave and the Bold come on? It's a kids' cartoon aimed at younger kids.
It's on Saturday.
Saturday at 8, though.
No. Saturday at 10 a.m.
Oh, 10 a.m.? Okay, excuse me. But, I mean, I didn't understand the Justice League cartoons. They were a little bit older, but Friday nights at 8, what kid is up Friday nights at 8? They're doing something with their parents, you know, or going out to see a movie.
This generation, and you guys know, and I know, it's all going to be on demand and content online. It's not going to be sitting on your in front of your TV at Friday night at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, come on, please.
I can't remember the last time. Well, I probably did this week, but I know what I did. I watched Heroes for the first time Monday night at 9 o'clock, all season long. It's on Hulu. It's all on Hulu. Uh-huh. You know.
Yeah.
That's when I watch it.
And completely off topic, but wasn't it freaking hilarious that like 3 weeks ago they go into that comic shop and there's like displays for all these Jeff Loeb comics like the week after he gets fired?
God, that's hilarious.
Agreeing with the whole online thing, and just think of what life is going to be when DC finally gets off their ass, wakes up, and realize that this whole digital comics thing might be a good idea. You know, I mean, Marvel's getting there. I mean, they've got exclusive content on their online site, and they've got content up there for free along with the pay stuff. And they're eventually going to get to a point. I'm saying maybe 2 years down the road from here that we're going to see as many books in the shop as we will online. Almost everything is going to be available online as well. And mm-hmm. DC's just not going down that road right now, and it makes me sad. It really does.
It'll happen. I mean, everything online. Everything is getting digitized these days. I mean, look at Google's project with all the libraries across the country that they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is going digital. I mean, it's inevitable that comic books will happen. You know, I find it personally hard to read a comic book at my desk on my computer. You know, I'm going to need like a Kindle or something like that. to read comic books. Well, or like a netbook or something, you know.
Well, and the iPhone. The iPhone just got an app a little while ago where you can watch. I think Dark Horse Comics and I think IDW Comics and one or two others are available via the iTunes Store.
But see, that's still too small. You can't get a two-page spread, you know, on the iPhone.
Well,
no, you can't. Have you checked out any of the motion comics that DC has done? The Watchmen
The Batman
Black and White came out, and I bought that immediately. And they're pretty cool. They're a little bit different than the way Watchmen does it. I really like the way they do it because all the text boxes and the word balloons are there, as well as the characters moving. It fits it. The Batman Black and White took a different approach. Similar to what was on the, I guess the I Am Legend DVD had some comics thing on it, but it is, you know, it's just moving, it's pictures and it's sounds and stuff, and I really like the Watchmen one because it has all the word balloons. I prefer that better.
Eagle One Media did that with a couple of comics. They did the Daredevil Kevin Smith run, and they had the sound effects and actors. And they had the word balloons. But there was no motion to it, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
The motion was only that the word balloons would appear, and that was it.
The stuff that they're doing on the Watchmen one with the motion and stuff is just amazing, though.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's stuff that, you know, definitely I think is going in the right direction for comic books. I mean, making anything accessible via iTunes in any way, shape, or form right now is a plus because almost everybody's using iTunes of all ages. So, you know, you'll be able to get people out there, especially if it's a motion comic, that you could put on your iPod or iPhone and still be able to watch it and understand it and go buy it. With the whole, reading comic books on like a Kindle or something, first the Kindle needs to be, you know, color. Mm-hmm. And that's step one. Once it gets to that, then maybe we'll get more of those. But I wanted to touch on independent comics a little bit because we haven't really touched on it past what Sean was talking about. Where do you think the independent scene is going? Because it seems like more and more books are going straight to trade as opposed to coming out in singles. And this is probably the best thing for independent comics right now because as opposed to having to worry that the third issue of a comic book is going to be the last one you read because a company runs out of money, at least they can put things into a collection and have an entire storyline right there for people to read. Because how else are they going to catch up with the big two unless an entire story is out there for you? So I mean, where do you see independent comics going trade wise? I mean, do you see them going farther into the realm of trades or staying where they are?
I think you're right. I think they're going to go more in the line of the graphic novel straight off the bat. If you look at a Scott Pilgrim or something like that, how it comes only four volumes now, mm-hmm. but yet it's like one of the better titles out there and wins awards and everything. And then you look at a book like, Exit Wounds or The Arrival or Hopi Glass, mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I think, it's funny, the whole independent movement, and I'm talking like real independent, not like independent like Star Wars coming from Dark Horse independent.
Yeah.
But, the hardcore independent stuff, it's kind of like it's got this explosion right now the past couple of years, a lot like the independent movies of the late 1990s and early century exploded onto the scenes and, won all the Academy Awards and everything. You're seeing that now in the comics genre, which is it's kind of refreshing, actually, because it keeps guys like Marvel and DC and Dark Horse and, to extent, Image and Dynamite grounded in a way.
No, I agree with that. And way too many people... at least way too many comic fans, and I'm sure that this does apply to other people as well. They're not going to read something if they're not guaranteed it's going to continue to come out, mm-hmm. And with the smaller publishers, especially in these economic times, they could fold tomorrow for all we know. If you have a collected edition out there where you wait and you make sure that you have every single bit of content, you're avoiding that from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And independent has to go there, in my opinion. There's going to come a point where there's going to be more trades on the shelf from an independent company than there will be singles. Brent, agree or disagree?
I'd have to agree. I mean, I'm not that big into independent books. I mean, I'm gradually getting there, I guess, with all the picks that we're doing for the review corner. But, I mean, like Hellboy, I guess it's not really an independent book because it has a movie out there, but... Even like 30 Days a Night or something like that, I'm more inclined to pick that up and trade, whereas collected, Well, especially that the movies come out. But, I mean, yeah, I'd say that independent would have to go to trades because it's more cost-effective for the reader to get something that they don't really know. You get the whole story for $10 or $12 or whatever. I think that it's more cost-effective that way. And that just like Umbrella Academy, right? So I got that, and I wasn't going to – I didn't get it in singles initially. I was kind of straying away from it. Ian, you picked it for the review corner, and then I went and bought the trade, not knowing if I'd like it or not, but just because I knew that I had to read the second issue, the second miniseries. But if it wasn't in trade, I would not have gone out and gotten the single, so does that make sense?
It's what I do. But
I'm with Brent. I'm more inclined to pick up an independent run like an Umbrella Academy in trade form based on recommendations from friends.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing I'm really following is Spawn. The Spawn collections, they're up to volume 6 right now. I might be the only person in the country that's picking them up, but I love these things. 20 issues, you know, not one sitting, but in a big, thick volume. I love getting these things. The art's great. Beautiful pages. The pages are nice. Thick paper, you know, and
this
30
is old,
bucks,
this is
I
old
can swing.
Spawn?
Yeah, but okay. They're on volume 6, and it's up to issue 116. And they're on 185 right now. So 3 more volumes, I'll be caught up.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So it's going to be great.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, they have like the Armageddon collection or whatever, where the world ended or something like that. But I know that's going to be in the next 2 issues or something like that of what I'm already collecting, and I've got a nice bookshelf that goes 1 to 6 now.
Sweet.
But I love getting those. But I mean, I'm probably the only body doing that because it's old Spawn.
Well, let me branch on that a little bit and include the big two in this as well about the collections. It took us until now to get a full collection of Starman, you know, and the omnibuses are coming out really effing slow. But at least we have a collection that will be guaranteed. We have every single bit of Starman in there, including the Shade miniseries and the Shade journals, which were left out from the original trades when they came out. Are we getting to more of a completist trade realm? Like as trades, I guess, evolve, where they're going to have to need to have almost every single bit of information if they're a hardcover to survive on the market, or else people are going to be pissed. Because I know that fanboys are completists in the first place. Is it necessary to have every bit of information that was in the original singles to please everybody, Brent?
I don't think it's necessary because you know, you had them in trade before that, but I think the reason that they're putting them out with everything now is because they've been out of print for so long, and people have been asking for it, and then, you know, hey, look, all of a sudden, James Robinson is back for DC. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I guess we should put his great book out in trade, maybe, in complete order. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's just a timing issue and maybe like a contractual thing or something like that. But, I mean, everything that they're writing now, like Batman Rest in Peace, we were talking about that at the beginning of the show, that's going to be a 6-issue trade or hardcover, right? They've already solicited it. It's not going to have 682, 683, and Final Crisis 6 in it. So it's not going to be the complete story. So I think you will never get that because Final Crisis 6 is where the story really ends, and DiDio said that, you know, this week on Newsarama, but – they'll never put it in a collection itself.
At least not for 20 years.
Yeah, I think I have a few collections where there's some random issue in it, but you know, it's part of the crossover event. You know, mm-hmm. Like Our Worlds at War has like the JLA Our Worlds at War issue in there, but that was part of the crossover event. Stuff happened in that book, but this is Batman's story ends in Final Crisis number 6, which is another big event book. They're not going to put one and one in the other one. It's just never going to happen unless you bind it yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chris?
Yeah, well, going back to what we said about the Dark Tower book, you know, they're not including that stuff in the hardcover, and it's kind of sad, you know. And then if more on the superhero line, if you look at an event within the event, like Amazon's Attack, which was in Countdown –
oh, yeah.
Which, you know, you pan it all you want, but I thought Amazon's Attack wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. What made it bad was that they had all the extras and all these Countdown comic books.
Not even that, but Wonder Woman fought her mother, which was a pivotal turning point in the Amazon's tech story.
Yeah.
She did it in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And that's not included in the 6-issue trade. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, that goes back to me saying that I don't know what DC is doing. You know, I just I don't know. I think we're going to see a lot of these mini series, though, like the Starman Omnibus, like the Alan Moore Swamp Thing. They're kind of revamping. And then on the Marvel side of things, with their Premier Classic line, you've got them reissuing Daredevil Without Man Without Fear, Marvel's the mini series, and I think they're going to be collecting a lot of their early '90s. You know, annual events like, you know, Evolutionary War or something mm-hmm. silly like that, or Atlantis Attacks will probably eventually get collected, which is good because it hasn't been collected before, but it's bad because they're not that great of a story, you know. but they, at least they are getting collected.
Well, yeah, but here we are. You know, let's say, for example, well, just going to Marvel with the Civil War and the Secret Invasion stuff like that, you need a shopping list to know what order to read stuff in. And if you, you know, if you want the full story and you haven't been picking it up in singles and you're trying to find trades and you pick up, say, Secret Invasion X-Men and Secret Invasion Thor and Secret Invasion New Avengers and Secret Invasion Mighty Avengers and Secret Invasion and Frontline and Ms. Marvel and the list goes on and on, you know, you're not going to know which ones are going to be important and you're not going to know which ones you could just go ahead and skip over. There's no way you're going to get a complete event in trades with Secret Invasion. I mean, you'd have to be a millionaire to buy all these trades. You know?
Well, I think Secret Invasion is a different thing.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Beast.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Secret Invasion, the trade thing, is more similar to Civil War because I really liked reading Civil War and Civil War Frontline back-to-back consecutively. I thought that was a really nice read when it was coming out, you know, every other week or something like that. Even though there's two different complete storylines – the stuff that happened in Frontline bounced off what had happened previously in Civil War. Like, you know, Spider-Man takes his mask off at the end of whatever it was, right? And then that issue of Frontline would come out, and it would deal all with that and J. Jonah Jameson's reaction and whatnot. And it was a lot better than what Mark Miller gave it. Mm-hmm. And even Secret Invasion now, you're going to be reading the trade, and it's just going to be Skrulls. Look, we're here. Attack. Oh, I'm Spider-Woman, and I sound like a man. I get shot in the jaw in 7. I think you're dead. Oh, wait, you're not dead. Oh, wait, you pop back up and I get shot again. I thought she was done for.
That's the best description of Secret Invasion I have ever fucking heard.
Okay, but you're not getting the whole story because you don't know that all the backstory that happened in New and Mighty Avengers. You know, I think the Chung issues are the most essential ones that they should put in that trade, but they're not going to do it because they don't want, you know, Bendis, Lionel Yu, Chung. They want Bendis, Lionel Yu, Laura Martin, whatever the anchor was, Mark Morales or something like that, you know?
If you really want the full story of those big events that Marvel does, honestly, the best book, you got to wait a while, and it's going to cost you some money, but those Chronicle books they put out, they did it for Civil War, they did it for World War Hulk, and what it does, and Brent, you're right, they take the main story, and then they take the best of the backup tales or the tales that make the most sense, and they lump it in for $4.99, and they bring out 12 of them over 12 months. You take those 12 books and you bind them yourself into a nice book, and then you have the complete Civil War.
Wow.
Or you could just wait till they put those out, and you can go to the comic shop, page through them, see what issues are in there. Take your old issues and buy them and save yourself the money.
That too, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are alternatives, save. You know? Yes. There are all alternatives.
Yeah, it's all up to whether or not you're willing to wait, I guess. And, not that many people are going to wait, you know, because Civil War, didn't the Civil War Chronicles just end like 4 months ago?
Yeah, probably. The first one came out in like summer of 2007, something like that. So, and then I think the Hulk ones are still going on, or maybe they've ended.
They're doing Brand New Day also. They're doing Amazing Spider-Man Brand New Day.
And they're going to do Secret Invasion. You know they will.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me, though. They did it after the trade comes out. Let's put this after the trade comes out. I don't really understand that. Let's put it out before you put out the trade. That way, if you really want to buy it again, you can buy two more issues or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, well, somebody dropped the ball on that, but whatever. That everybody drops the ball these days, it seems like. Wow, we're cranky old men, aren't we?
Hey, season.
Get off my season. Compost heap.
We're seasoned old men.
Yes.
Or just seasoned men. Where nobody's old here.
Yeah, again, seasoned cumin. So let's get some final thoughts here on Shreyas, because I think we've gone the gambit, really. Let's end it off with, what price point do you start worrying about the trade market at? Because I know that, you know, the prices of singles obviously are going up, but trades haven't been entirely affected yet, unless you live in Britain or Canada, where I know prices have gone up. Like in Great Britain, they went up huge over the past couple of weeks. I mean, I've been reading Lying in the Gutters, and I think there was like a $4 increase in trades. Due to the pound going down in value, they had to raise the price of the American trades. Of course, the British publishers are thrilled because, you know, now they have the cheaper books, and hopefully they're going to get more sales out of it. But the imports, everybody's screwed on. But here in the United States, and well, you can even say elsewhere, what price do you have to start worrying about trades at where trade sales are going to start going down because they're just costing too much money? Chris?
I did a little article on my blog a few weeks ago regarding the let me pull it up real quick regarding the Civil War trade. Mm-hmm. And or no, I'm sorry, Secret Invasion trade. I'm stuck on Civil War. And just to give you an idea, I talked about I compared the Captain Britain, the Black Panther, and the Incredible Hercules. Mm-hmm. Books. Just to give you an idea, Captain Britain, 96 pages for $16.99. Mm-hmm. Black Panther, 96 pages for $12.99. And Hercules, 128 pages for $14.99. Okay. Now, apparently the Captain Britain one was the wrong price. That's probably going to go back down to $12.99. Mm-hmm. But the price points for these things are all over the map.
Yeah.
And it seems like that whatever the hot character is the point where they can make the most money out of it. You know, I could be wrong on that. Who knows?
Well, that's how they're doing things. That's what they're testing out. Yeah. Now with the $3.99 books and the $2.99 books. Like, New Avengers is going to be $3.99 just because it's New Avengers.
Yeah, yeah. Let's raise the price on the book that everybody buys and right. See if yeah. people will buy it. Yeah, that's where you told me I have to understand Dark Reign, asshole.
Yeah.
So if you want to understand Dark Reign, read these books. But they're $3.99. I don't want to buy them. Then you won't understand Dark Reign. I'm sorry.
Well, that's why you get them from a place like HeroesCorner.com. Okay, continue.
Exactly.
But I think what Brent was saying earlier, what Sean was saying that we were talking about. There's too many titles, and to that point, what Brent was saying, you've got to be wise and to pick and choose what titles you want to read to follow along the major story arcs. I mean, we're talking major events here now.
Right.
And, you know, so do you really need to pick up the Incredible Hercules to follow along Secret Invasion?
Not really, no.
Probably not. But they're going to title it anyway, and they're going to charge you an extra amount of $2 or $3 just because it's got the Secret Invasion title in it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's it.
And here's the thing. You could pick up – I'm going to name the four trades that you should pick up with Secret Invasion, and that's it. Everything else, you can just go ahead and avoid. Secret Invasion Deadpool.
What?
Yes. Yes, because something huge happens in issue 3 of Deadpool – that has major ramifications on Secret Invasion. So Secret Invasion Deadpool, the regular Secret Invasion book, Secret Invasion New Avengers, Secret Invasion Mighty Avengers. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really need to pick up anything else. And everybody, I guarantee you that the numbers on Secret Invasion Deadpool aren't going to be that high, and yet issue 3 of Deadpool is huge.
What the fuck happened to Deadpool? Because I didn't read it, and I thought it ended all right.
Okay, has everybody
relatively speaking.
Has everybody read the last issue of Secret Invasion on this call before I start saying anything?
Sure, go right ahead.
You sure?
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay, all right. Well, again, spoiler for anybody who hasn't, but in Secret Invasion number 8, Norman Osborn's the one who shoots Spider-Woman.
Yes.
You know, Spider-Woman Skrull, at least.
After she came back from the dead after getting an arrow to the face.
Right. He got the information on their genome from Deadpool at the end of Deadpool number 3.
What does that have to do with anything?
That's how Norman Osborn got his information. That's how Norman Osborn was able to defeat everybody and become the big ass motherfucker he is now in the Marvel U, thanks to the end of Secret Invasion.
See,
so if not for Deadpool,
he had a big ass gun.
Yeah,
Reed had a big ass gun.
Yeah,
Fury had a big ass gun.
Yeah,
they're killing him left and right. It read to me like just chance Norman shot the gun when she stood up.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't.
I don't understand what the genome has to do with any of that. So I don't think you could say go read a Deadpool trade by Daniel Way.
I'm telling you, it's important. All right, that's all I'm saying. All right,
if you say so.
Yeah, if I say so, and I do so.
I'm saying you didn't have to read it because I read it and it read just fine.
All right.
Out of the blue, but
well, hey, if you want as close to the full story as Secret Invasion as possible, those are the only four books you really need to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's where I'm standing at least. But Brent, I know you raised your hand for the class, and I happen to miss it, so please speak.
Okay, well, you're asking about what price on a trade do I start worrying? Mm-hmm. I would have to point to the World War Hulk event trade, mm-hmm. 5 issues, $25.
Mm.
I call bullshit on that.
Was it a hardcover or a trade?
No, it was the trade. They didn't even come out with a hardcover.
Oh my god.
$25, and I went, 5 issues? I know two of them were big, but damn, that's pushing it.
Oh my god.
You know, because you can put out, if Image can put out 20 issues of Spawn on nice paper for $30, and you know, you can put out a 12-issue run for 25 or something like that. Like, you know, the Heroes Reborn trades, I think, are all 12 issues. Mm-hmm. $25, that's pretty reasonable, right?
Yeah.
But you want the same price for 5? I'm sorry, man, but that's just not going to fly. And especially when the Civil War trade that's probably sitting, you know, on the shelf above it or something like that, if you're in Barnes & Noble or Borders or something, you're going to pull that out, see that it's 7 issues, and it's, I don't know what it was, but like 20 – $17.99, let's say, or $15,
mm-hmm.
whatever it was. It's not $25. You're going to look at it and go, same thickness, $10 more. Not going to get this one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm totally there. And, you know, my explanation is pretty damn simple. I have to save at least $5 off of what I spent or would have spent on the single issues to buy a trade. That's the way I feel.
At that point, waiting to get the trade didn't even save you any money.
Yeah, because Chris, isn't that what reading trades is all about? You know, saving money off of the singles.
It is, unless they add extra bonus material that they can kind of get you with.
Right, which is somewhat acceptable, but even when that happens, it's usually at least a $2 or $3 you know, price difference between the books and what came out.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah, you should always save your money with the trades.
Yeah, no,
always. Yeah,
no question, exactly. And I mean, you're definitely saving if you're going through like an online retailer or something like that. But I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about getting it in the comic shop. I need to save at least $4 or $5 to make myself happy. If it mm-hmm. comes to a point where the trades are almost the exact same price as singles, something's gone horribly wrong, and I quit. You know, like screw comics. I'm done at that point. You know?
Put on your peg leg and become a pirate.
Yarr. Just...
But I think with these price hikes we're going to see in 2009, you're going to see the price of trades go up a buck or two.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable.
But so are the price of comics.
Well, that's it's all going to go up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as long as I'm still saving a little bit of money on the trades, then I'll be a happy camper, and I might actually still switch over some of my books to trades because, okay, with the new apartment, I'm realizing how pretty it is to see all those books on a shelf versus the books that I have in long boxes, in bags and boards that I need to go digging through to find what issue I want, as opposed to being able to go to a shelf, pick it up, and say, here's my Starman Omnibus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm starting to realize, you know, as I get older, this is something I might want to have. So I'm probably going to get more trades even just for that because, hey, trades are pretty.
They're pretty. Yeah.
Yeah, except for when they're printed on cheap paper, V for Vendetta, I'm looking at you.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Just wait for the new Absolute version coming out in 2009.
Yeah, but I don't want to spend $75 for a A book.
Yes.
I don't want to spend 99 on Ronin either.
Oh, if they recolor, even the coloring on V for Vendetta sucked. Yeah. I mean, I know I read that part in the trade where it said originally printed in black and white, and we kind of fudged the coloring. But even so, still.
Is that verbatim? They said that? They fudged the coloring?
They didn't fudge it, but it basically said this is printed originally in black and white. Because David Lloyd didn't bother to draw all the lines, we're kind of, you know, coloring it just to make you a little bit happy.
It makes me really want to see like a for mature readers comic where all the fucks are replaced with fudge.
Put that in a digest form, then.
Yeah, here we go. Alias. Put Brian Michael Bendis's Alias in an edited form into fudge a trade, you. And the first line of the comic book is fudge.
And put that in digest format next to Ant-Man. and put a bookmark in it. You know, like some people have bookmarks with their I know I've seen one shop where it has like the barcode on the bookmark or something like that.
Yeah, darn you, you mother fudger.
Yeah, I don't know why. But yeah, put that next to the Ant-Man one and put the bookmarks right on the spot where Luke and Jessica are getting it on, or you know, that one page in Ant-Man where he's like standing on the showerhead looking at Miss Marvel.
Gotta tell you, I missed that issue where Luke and Cage were getting it on.
Those are kids' books right there.
All right, I think at this point we're basically all talking out of our ass anyway, because it's been, you know, we've been talking for the last hour and a half. So I think we can basically wrap it up at this point. And one more time, Comic Timing is brought to you by Heroes Corner over at heroescorner.com. The deadline for December books is fastly approaching, folks. So you only have a little bit more time to get yourself your books in December. So please get them in by this upcoming Monday. If you're listening to this after Monday, well, they'll have the products up for January, probably a day after or 2 days after that due date approaches. So hold on to your seats, folks. You'll have your new review corner picks and your new specials and your new discounts and all that coming up very, very soon. The review corner for December is Detective Comics number 853, part 2 of Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader. 50% off, Heroes Corner price of $2, retail $3.99. War of Kings, Dark Hawk number 1, 50% off retail, Heroes Corner price of $2, retail $3.99. And Bang Tango, 75% off retail, Heroes Corner price of 75 cents, retail $2.99. The Comic Timing first time discount code is CTROCKS, that's CTROCKS. Get yourself 5% off your first order with Heroes Corner, but only your first order. With Heroes Corner, 5% off extra. So go ahead and check that out at the best customer service around, heroescorner.com, and we wish you all a happy and a healthy new year. But before we do, hey, Chris, you do a podcast. Tell people about it.
I do a podcast called The Collected Comics Library, and by the time this airs, episode 200 will be out.
Ooh, woo-hoo! Nice.
No, I know. So, and then I get my, I'm talking about, what am I going to talk about in that show? The two Daredevil omnibuses of Frank Miller. So
sweet.
That'll be fun to talk about. And then I got my year in review show coming out on December 31st.
You know, Daredevil's parents are dead.
Really?
Yeah.
So are Peter Parker.
He's the goddamn Daredevil.
Yep. Oh, and then I also do a little podcast called the Tomorrow's Publishing Tune-In Podcast, too.
Sweet. And that is for Tomorrow's Publishing, obviously.
It is, yep.
Okay, and you can find these at?
CollectedComicsLibrary.com and Tomorrow's.com.
Sweet.
And what are you guys up to these days?
Well, I'm glad you asked, sir. Well, actually, it is official that Comic Timing will be in the podcast arena at New York Comic Con. Just half of it. Yeah, right. well, yeah, we're sharing a table with Geeks Unite, so Juan will be there along with me. Rath is going to be stuck at Midtown Comics, so he won't actually be able to be pimping Geeks Unite, but Juan will do the job for him, and possibly Danny if she's over there, I don't know. But yeah, so we'll be back at New York Comic Con this year, and it'll be fun. It'll be awesome. Stop on by, say hello. Tell me you enjoy the show. Tell me you don't enjoy the show. Tell me you have no idea what the fuck the show is and you just happen to listen to it. Either way, just, you know, let me know that you're around and I'll be perfectly fine, because I don't want to just sit there all the time and be like, hello, hello, I'm so alone and cold.
Hello, hello.
But yeah, that's sort of what's going on with me. I mean, we already mentioned you know, MegaCon, so we don't have to mention that again. And there'll be an actual promo for New York Comic Con once they send me the promo. So for now, that's all I can say. NewYorkComicCon.com, check it out. Go meet me, stuff. And Brent, you actually have a BK's Bullets coming up, don't you?
Yes, I do. Umbrella Academy Apocalypse Suite.
Sweet.
So should be out before this one.
Good. Good. Well, that's good because, well, we want to get that one out before we actually review the second Umbrella Academy.
Right. That's why I reread it again yesterday and recorded it.
Good, good.
Brent, is that the big $75 one you're doing?
The same? No.
What?
No, this is the book my girlfriend bought me for free. It's the only other reason why I got it, too.
So I didn't actually spend
any money on it, so I had nothing to lose.
But are you reviewing the big oversized one? That's my question.
There's an oversized one?
For $75, yeah.
Oh. For Umbrella Academy?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Are you pulling my leg?
No, it just came out.
Oh. Does it come with, you know, a black nail polish and eyeliner?
I don't know. It comes with, I don't know.
Yeah, and it also comes with an emo poetry book, I'm sure, but...
I want to get the Umbrella Academy umbrella. That's what I want.
Oh, dude, that would be great. Or how about the patch for the academy? You know, because you got to have some sort of uniform for an academy. I'm done.
$75. That book should come with a jacket.
It might.
And the review corner episode that we'll be doing, we've got Umbrella Academy, like we just said, Justice Society of America wrapping up the Magog arc,
almost wrapping up
because there's one more after that, and the Elektra, the Daredevil Captain America thing. So yeah, we'll be doing that sometime, hopefully next week. So yeah, it'll be fun, it'll be good, it'll be awesome and stuff like that. So we're basically done at this point, unless there's anything else you need to pimp, Brent, is there?
Nope.
Okay. All
oh, right. I had a voicemail on Raging Bullets.
Oh, sweet.
They actually, did you listen to that? They actually played the lost, BK's Bullets. Smallville. Oh, they actually played
beautiful.
It. I complained about it, and they made fun of me for it. I complained about it again, they made fun of me for it. And then Sean was like, you know what, let's just play it and end it. See you guys. And it just ran from there.
I don't know if you would know the story behind this, Chris, but last year... for not this season's Smallville, but the season before that's Smallville premiere, Brent recorded a BK's Bullets for Raging Bullets because they were going to do an episode on Smallville, and that episode never came to be. So that BK's Bullets sat in a can for basically a year and a half, until finally, he's talking about, yeah, hey, this is BK's Bullets, and, you know, I've been doing BK's Bullets for a year, and let's talk about the season premiere of Smallville, you know, the new season of Smallville. So that finally aired on Raging Bullets a year later.
Nice.
Yes.
And a half.
A year and a half, yeah. All right, so check it out, RagingBullets.com, and the episode before that, I had a voicemail also bitching and moaning about Blue Beetle, so that'll be fun. So, all right, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com, and we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. Please dig us on dig.com. And please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. It spreads the word about Comic Timing. So, yet again, thank you for joining us, Chris, for the first time, and hopefully not for the last.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Good to have you on. And one more pimp out there to Sean Pryor, pkdmedia.com. Sean Pryor, amazing fella. Really, really nice. And Brent's okay. And as always, there's always time for comics. Do me a favor. Make yourself a bit louder.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Is that better?
I don't know. Guys, can you hear him all right?
I hear him.
Okay. Brent, you hear him okay?
Sure.
Okay. You're on this call, by the way, with Brent Cassino, my co-host, and Chris Marshall from Quacky Comics Library.
Oh, hey. What's up, guys? How y'all doing?
What's up, Sean?
I'm good, Brent. I'm good, man.
That was Chris who just talked. But
because I was looking at like the little insignias light up, and I was like, okay, it looked like that's like Brent's lit up, and then Chris's was like silent. I'm like, oh crap! All right,
okay, let's put it this way: Chris is the smooth talking one, and Brent's just Brent.
Oh, I'm smooth.
With a silk, man.
Hell yeah, man. and especially... God damn you, Brent. You son of a bitch. You know, that's it. I'm just not going to look at the chat while I'm talking, or else I'm just going to start cracking up. All right. Let me go from where I'm going. All right. So, Brent, agree?
Say again?
Well, about everything that was just being discussed just now while you were on mute. I just wanted to catch you on that because I could hear your mic turning back on. So. yet again, sucker, I know where you sleep.
Sorry.
All right, we're out.
Good deal.
Sweet.
Brent, I just sent you that link.
Yeah, I see it now.
Yeah.
Gee, it includes expanded sketchbook section, which was in the trade I have, mm-hmm. and concept designs, which is in the trade I have, and short story from Free Comic Book Day issue, which there are two short stories in this trade I have. So, I don't understand.
The only thing it's bigger. That's it.
No, it's not $75. It's $80.
It's $80. It's got a tip sheet signed by Gerard Way. Big deal. It's 1,500 copies. I wonder if they're going to sell them all.
No, they're not. I highly doubt it.
Hope Gerard Way signs it in his blood.
I guarantee you this is going to be on like the 40% off bin in about a year.
Probably. You're probably right. You know, the Walking Dead ones sold out, though.
Oh, yeah?
Just wait 10 years until My Chemical Romance isn't popular anymore and he's a nobody, and you can find it for really cheap.
Well, I'm just happy that I have my Absolute New Frontier sitting on a shelf now.
Oh, that's pretty. That's a pretty book.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. All right, Chris. Well, thanks again for joining us, man. And we'll be in touch. All right, we want this to be a more than just a one-time thing for sure.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. I haven't been really available, so but I'm around. You guys can always get a hold of me. So
sweet.
Sure.
Right, well, episode 160. Let's plan on it.
Hey,
Brent, where do you live? Right, where do you live?
I'm in Gainesville in Florida, at the University of Florida right now.
Okay, you're still in Florida. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm still in Brooklyn.
No, I know that.
but he's out of the closet.
Yes.
Are you in a new apartment?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah. This was the first episode in the new apartment, so...
Dude, you mentioned that like 15 times.
New apartment.
He's so
new
proud of it.
New apartment.
It's a running joke on the show.
Yes.
My God.
Well, come on. I lived in a Harry Potter-sized hole before this, so it's nice to actually have room to breathe.
You did. You had pictures of that online. I remember that.
I have the YouTube video of it, too.
Since we have extra time, this is a Comic Timing blooper flashback.
Jimmy's Batman.
Kids today.
Sorry, I'm only 20. Oh my God.
Batman Hush. That was it.
That's when you started, dude?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That's when I started core. I've been reading trades before then, but that's when I started, like, going
weekly. I started hardcore at Electric Blue Superman and John Byrne's Fourth World. Okay? That's hardcore.
Dude, you have to watch it. You actually got hardcore with Electric Blue?
I started so long ago, if you actually had trades, that was considered hardcore.
Wow. I remember those days.
I've been doing it so long that when people referred to trading comics, they meant handing individual issues to friends.